do so. Foolishly, the threesome had failed to take a flashlight, which was extremely dangerous because much of the soil around the warm pools is crusty and thin, and one can easily fall through into a scalding vent below. In any case, as they made their way back to their dorm, they came across a stream that they had had to leap over earlier. They backed up a few paces, linked arms, and on the count of three, took a running jump. In fact, it wasn't the stream at all. It was a boiling pool. In the dark, they had lost their bearings. None of the three survived. I thought about this the next morning as I made a brief call on my way out of the park at a place called Emerald Pool in the Upper Geyser Basin. Doss hadn't had time to take me there the day before, but I thought I ought at least to have a look at it, for Emerald Pool is a historic site. In 1965, a husband and wife team of biologists named Thomas and Louise Brock, while on a summer study trip, had done a crazy thing. They had scooped up some of the yellowy-brown scum that rimmed the pool and examined it for life. To their, and eventually the wider world's, deep surprise, it was full of living microbes. They had found the world's first extremophiles, organisms that could live in water that had previously been assumed to be much too hot or acid or choked with sulfur to bear life. Emerald Pool, remarkably, was all these things, yet at least two types of living things, Sulfolobus acidocaldarius and Thermophilus aquaticus, as they became known, found it congenial. It had always been supposed that nothing could survive above temperatures of 50 degrees centigrade, 122 degrees Fahrenheit. But here were organisms basking in rank, acidic waters nearly twice that hot. For almost 20 years, one of the Brock's two new bacteria, Thermophilus aquaticus, remained a laboratory curiosity, until a scientist in California named Carey B. Mullis realized that heat-resistant enzymes within it could be used to create a bit of chemical wizardry known as a polymerase chain reaction, which allows scientists to generate lots of DNA from very small amounts, as little as a single molecule in ideal conditions. It's a kind of genetic photocopying, and it became the basis for all subsequent genetic science, from academic studies to police forensic work. It won Mullis the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1993. Meanwhile, scientists were finding even hardier microbes, now known as hyperthermophiles, which demand temperatures of 80 degrees centigrade, 176 degrees Fahrenheit, or more. The warmest organism found so far, according to Francis Ashcroft in Life at the Extremes, is Pyrolobus fumarii, which dwells in the walls of ocean vents where the temperature can reach 113 degrees centigrade, 235.4 degrees Fahrenheit. The upper limit for life is thought to be about 120 degrees centigrade, 248 degrees Fahrenheit, though no one actually knows. At all events, the Brock's findings completely changed our perception of the living world. As NASA scientist Jay Bergstrahl has put it, wherever we go on Earth, even into what seemed like the most hostile possible environments for life, as long as there is liquid water and some source of chemical energy, we find life. Life, it turns out, is infinitely more clever and adaptable than anyone had ever supposed. This is a very good thing, for as we are about to see, we live in a world that doesn't altogether seem to want us here. Part 5. Life itself. The more I examine the universe and study the details of its architecture, the more evidence I find that the universe in some sense must have known we were coming. Freeman Dyson. 16. Lonely Planet. It isn't easy being an organism. In the whole universe, as far as we yet know, there is only one place, an inconspicuous outpost of the Milky Way called Earth, that will sustain you, and even it can be pretty grudging. From the bottom of the deepest ocean trench to the top of the highest mountain, the zone that covers nearly the whole of known life, is only something over a dozen miles. Not much when set against the ruminess of the cosmos at large. For humans, it is even worse, because we happen to belong to the portion of living things that took the rash but venturesome decision 400 million years ago to crawl out of the seas and become land-based and oxygen-breathing. In consequence, no less than 99.5% of the world's habitable space by volume, according to one estimate, is fundamentally, in practical terms, completely off-limits to us. It isn't simply that we can't breathe in water, but that we couldn't bear the pressures. Because water is about 1,300 times heavier than air, pressures rise swiftly as you descend, by the equivalent of one atmosphere for every 10 meters, 33 feet, of depth. On land, if you rose to the top of a 500-foot eminence, Cologne Cathedral or the Washington Monument, say, the change in pressure would be so slight as to be indiscernible. At the same depth underwater, however, your veins would collapse and your lungs would compress to the approximate dimensions of a Coke can. Amazingly, people do voluntarily dive to such depths without breathing apparatus for the fun of it in a sport known as free diving. Apparently, the experience of having your internal organs rudely deformed is thought exhilarating, though not presumably as exhilarating as having them return to their former dimensions upon resurfacing. To reach such depths, however, divers must be dragged down, and quite briskly, by weights. Without assistance, the deepest anyone has gone and lived to talk about it afterward was an Italian named Umberto Pellizzari, who in 1992 dove to a depth of 236 feet, lingered for a nanosecond, and then shot back to the surface. In terrestrial terms, 236 feet is just slightly over the length of one New York City block, so even in our most exuberant stunts, we can hardly claim to be masters of the abyss. Other organisms do, of course, manage to deal with the pressures at depth, though quite how some of them do so is a mystery. The deepest point in the ocean is the Mariana Trench in the Pacific. There, some 7 miles down, the pressures rise to over 16,000 pounds per square inch. We have managed once, briefly, to send humans to that depth in a sturdy diving vessel, yet it is home to colonies of amphipods, a type of crustacean similar to shrimp but transparent, which survive without any protection.